This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. A crime story in the local paper this spring caught the eye of Marilyn Barner Anselmi. She was about to, the story themselves were about female crime victims, one black, one white, and very different ways that the justice system had pursued those cases. The reporter compared the crimes to the unsolved murders and disappearances of a spate of women in Rocky Mount in the early 2000s. Marilyn Barner Anselmi is a playwright who often looks into issues of social justice. Her new play is called Seven Bridges Road. It takes inspiration from that true history, and she joins us now. Marilyn, welcome back to The State of Things.
Thank you, Frank. Happy to be here.
Tell us about that news story.
Well, as you mentioned, I saw it in the Rocky Mount Telegram early this spring, and I was struck by the sort of pathos of the story. Of course, I knew about the disappearance and murders of the string of black women that occurred in the 2000s. And I also knew about the very tragic murder of a leading white woman in Rocky Mount about the same time. And coincidentally, the solving of the murder of the white woman happened in one day, while the deaths of the black women were not solved, maybe not even completely solved today, but they languished some for, you know, over 7-8 years. So the playwright in me, of course, that sort of pricked my interest, and I wondered how I could write something where some of those family members somehow came together.
And how did you approach that in the research?
Well, we had a lot of research. There was a lot of coverage that had been done, not so much during the time, but since the time, and not so much in Rocky Mount, but there was research done, and there were reporting in Raleigh newspapers, and there was some television articles. WRAL did some interviews, so anything I could get my hands on, I did.
And let's go back over those details, because I remember back then in the early 2000s seeing a report in the News and Observer, and
yeah.
This was after a number of homicides had been committed.
Yes.
But the story was about families, black families in Rocky Mount, the families of victims, wondering where the coverage was.
Exactly.
This had been going on for some period of months and over really the course of years. There had been no coverage and not much progress in the cases. And it was the Raleigh newspaper that's reporting on this.
Exactly.
And I only remember it because we tried to then bring it on the air, and there was nobody in Rocky Mount who could talk about it. It was not a pattern, and it was not on anybody's radar.
Yeah, that's the sense that I got as well. Most of the women had some sort of ties to prostitution and drug use. So, you know, that's oftentimes viewed, I think, tragically as the throwaway folks. One of the, I think, very, very telling quotes that I saw is someone in law enforcement said, well, these kind of people walk away from their lives all the time. So, you know, sometimes the women were reported as missing, sometimes for years. So, yes, there were a lot of very, very emotional situations around that, a lot of feelings. I think a lot of the families still don't feel that justice has been served.
Tell us now about talking with those families and your suggestion that you'd like to sort of render this as a play.
Well, as I mentioned before, as a playwright, what interests me is not just the big sort of ticket items, but I like the personal behind that. So I wondered what would happen if we had an intersection of one of the black mothers who had lost a child and the daughter of the leading white woman who had lost her mother. So that was sort of the impetus for the theatrical sort of basis of the play, and that's where it took off. So once I get the basic outline, I just wait for the characters to step forward, which is what happened in this case.
In your research, did you talk to the families of the victims?
I tried really hard to find there was a support group with several of the moms from the black women who had disappeared, but unfortunately that group had disbanded, and a lot of those family members had moved away. So I was not able. I spoke with a person who had facilitated the support group. But I have spoken since the family members found out about the play. I've spoken with them. A couple of them actually attended the Nash Arts production of the play a couple of weekends ago. So that was very compelling to interview them and to get to know them and try to share at least my reason for writing the play.
And tell us more now about the play itself and outline the play that you have written.
Well, the play follows the two main characters, as I mentioned, are mother of one of the black victims and the daughter of the white victim, and how they come together in very unlikely ways. So how they come together is the daughter of the white woman is actually donating her mother's clothes to Goodwill, and that's where she meets one of the black mothers who is there to look for clothing. So they come together through that, and then I don't want to give away too much, but the play examines not only the worlds in which they come from and how different they are, while both families have experienced grief and trauma, how they got there and their experience, certainly in the justice system, is vastly different. And it follows the two characters and how grief sometimes does build that bridge, but how you cannot compare the worlds that they came from.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it gets difficult because, again, when you try to compare levels of grief, you know, you sort of can't do this
exactly.
To some degree. And then when there's a grievance on top of that,
yes,
that is the way the criminal justice system works, then you know, people can bridle, right, and say, well, no, this is only about the loss of a loved one and not about anything
Absolutely.
Else. How much of that did you come to this? I mean, obviously you read a story and it triggers a thought in your mind about the drama, the inherent drama and the inherent injustice in this. How much of a sense of that did you have? In other words, a criminal justice system that works in very different ways for people of color than it does in this country for white people.
Well, I think my artistic interest tends towards the social justice end. So certainly that was there and always is with me. But I actually met with a reporter who did the story, and he gave me as much he gave me a huge folder of information that he had accumulated over the years. So the more I read, Frank, the more I was just impressed with the injustice, impressed with the lack of justice and closure that those families had. And I wanted to write this story in a way that brought light to, you know, and I can't do anything probably to heal any wounds or to bring any justice or closure to this. But I think as writers, as artists, we have a responsibility to at least bring these issues out and get them talking about them. My sense is in small towns particularly, we don't do that. You know, we shy away from anything that causes controversy and gets both races in one place to even discuss those sort of issues. So I think that's one of the responsibilities of art.
Well, and along those lines, it's not just the criminal justice system, but also we in the media, right? It's the stories we choose to cover and whether or not
Absolutely.
We give them the same kind of weight. As you suggest, there is this judgment that you make about the victims, and it is shocking to see how that has worked its way into media organizations that I've worked with.
Sure.
I've frequently been shocked at some of that kind of response. So the way we tell the story and whether we tell the story
yes.
is critical. And, of course, this has resonance with stories that were more recent. Obviously, the tragic death of Eve Carson and
yes.
the way that played out. But the fact that there was another victim, a Duke grad student, who also lost his life to a homicide is something not reported and,
yep.
and without, wasn't treated at all the same way.
Yes. Yes.
Did that enter your mind? I mean, was any part of that, you know, sort of part of your creative process?
I don't know. I'm not sure what is part of my creative process.
Yeah.
I do, you know, I do my due diligence and then hope and pray that the characters will take over, which they did in this case. And I had no expectation that the play would be done, certainly not in Rocky Mount. So that was very refreshing and sort of reassuring that little tiny Nash Arts Council decided to, you know, to brave any blowback and do the play. But we got cut short because of the hurricane, so we only had one weekend of shows, but it was well attended, and we had terrific actors, local actors, which always amazes me that we've got the talent that we do in these small areas. But
the grad student that I was talking about in that story with the Eve Carson story was Abhijit Mahato, who is an Indian student, who East Indian at Duke University. What kind of response did you get? How did people talk to you afterward? And
they did. And as I told you before, we did have a couple of family members attend, and it was very emotional for them. I think they were surprised that a white woman wrote this play, to be frank. I think they were amazed at, I think that it was even on stage, that, yeah. that there was this sort of discussion that, you know, that it even occurred. I think they were, the calls that I got prior to the play going on at Nash Arts were not positive. The family members, I think, justifiably felt very concerned that I was taking advantage of their pain and their circumstances. And I, you know, the only thing I could tell them is, please read the script and please attend, mm-hmm. which they did.
They did, and it turned out better than you thought, or at least perhaps better than they thought. The characters do evolve in this, and this really is kind of takes some imagination because these things didn't take place. How did that work for you? I'm going to take you back into your creative process. Did you imagine a play where this kind of evolution would take place, or did these characters, do you have to let it sit for a while?
Well, you know, there has to be a change in the characters, and particularly the change, probably the arc, comes about with the white character who's lost her mother. And she has to come to grips. She has to finally recognize her own privilege and what the background that she came from. And it turns out that she actually, in the play, attends one of the support meetings with the other black mothers. And she realizes that what she's going through is not what they're going through. And she has a very painful sort of arc and understanding of her own place and how maybe she didn't understand herself either. So she's definitely the one who probably undertakes the most cathartic change, I would say.
But there is a change that takes place, and you can see it even in the kind of response that you got. I mean, a certain amount of well-justified mistrust,
yes,
from communities that,
yes,
have been enduring these kinds of things. And so that personal contact and that connection that gets made certainly has an effect on those of us who have come to understand what our privilege,
yes,
does. But for those who have, again, with great justification, not trusted, a little change there too when you encounter people who are willing to change.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
What about you as a playwright? Now you've gone through the process of writing this. What effect did it have on you?
In terms of how I approached the play or how I understood the whole situation?
Yeah, after you wrote the play, because I mean, you became a playwright. You have suffered this grief yourself.
Yes.
You've lost a child.
Yes. I think during the writing of it and afterwards and some of the reaction that I had from the families, it certainly helped me understand my own privilege, Frank, as you mentioned. I think, you know, I think grief can simultaneously be that bridge that brings us together, but it isn't. We're not on that same bridge.
Right.
And so it's essential that we understand that just because we've gone through something doesn't mean we understand what the other people go through as well. You know, I guess I got my feathers a little ruffled when some of the black family members were upset, because I thought, here I am putting myself, mm-hmm, out, and here I am. I mean, I think a lot of people in Rocky Mountain don't want to hear this talked about. So I thought, okay, I'm, you know, pat myself on the back. I'm brave. I'm taking this stance. And then I've got the folks that I'm trying to speak for, which I'm not sure we can ever do, angry at me. So I was kind of getting it from both sides. But, you know, maybe that's a good thing. If you're not making somebody mad, you're not doing something purposeful. So,
well, that can be transformative as well, because yes, then you can reexamine the position that you had to some degree. And that can happen with any one of us who have privilege, a sense that we're coming in to do a service.
That's right.
And so you should be grateful. And then,
yes,
you have to say to yourself, oh, my goodness, look at that.
Yes,
even
exactly,
with my best intentions,
exactly,
that was part of the problem.
Yes.
And it's something you came to realize. So that's the power of art, it seems to me, that it can have both for the artist and anybody who pays attention,
yes,
to art. It works from the inside out. And that grief isn't grief. I want to talk more about that. It's the leveling agent, or perhaps, as you said, the bridge. It's the place where we can come together. And yet, as you say, it's not all the same.
That's right.
Even though it's, we think it's the most basic emotion, what is the one thing that all humans experience?
That's right.
Got to be that. And yet, because of the social structures and the social devices that we've created and reinforce, it's not experienced the
same.
That's
right. That's right. The bridges aren't the same, you know, so our journey across them is very different, too, as well.
You're what's next for this play?
Well, it's gotten into a couple of festivals. It'll be actually in Nashville, Tennessee this weekend at the Women's Theater Project, which will be my seventh time having plays perform there. So that's good. The other Nashville, we like to say. And then it'll be in Southern California in February at another New Script development program. And I just keep submitting it. So away we go, we hope.
And we are certainly sorry that we couldn't have you on to promote this play in advance, but Hurricane Florence had other plans for us. So that was our plan, and we didn't do that. Marilyn Barner Anselmi, thank you so much for being my guest.
Thank you, Frank. Appreciate it.
Marilyn is the playwright whose new work is Seven Bridges Road, and you can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org. The State of Things is produced by Anita Rao, Laura Pelliser, Dana Terry, Amanda Magnus, and Jennifer Brookland. Robin Copley is our technical director. Al Widarski helped out today. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.